Well, obviously, it is that time of year when we look back at the old year and look ahead at the new year. And in the case of the stock market, you always hear about the Santa Claus rally and the January barometer and the presidential cycles. Well, all that stuff started with the Stock Traders Almanac. It's the 58th edition is just out. It's created by Yale Hirsch back in 1967. The tradition continues with his son, Jeffrey Hirsch, who's the editor-in-chief, and he joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
How are you, sir?
I'm well. I love the premise, which is, you know, learn from the past, so you're not doomed to repeat the old mistakes. That's the idea, right?
I like to say that those who study market history are bound to profit from it.
Well, tell me, what do you see in the crystal ball right now?
Well, we're looking for Santa. So far, you know, our outlook is pretty bullish for 2025, not as bullish as last year, as 2024. We're looking for, you know, 8 to 12% based upon post-election year cycles, the you know, economic readings that we're seeing, the Fed still being on our side, even though they kind of threw a little bit of a shot across the bow, resetting expectations. But Santa Claus is having some trouble right now. So our Santa Claus rally, as you mentioned, is our first indicator of the new year. And as Yale, my illustrious late father, famously said, if Santa Claus should fail to call, bears may come to Broad and Wall. And profit-taking here in the streets got Santa on a run. So we got to see if that comes in.
Yeah, we're ending the old year with a whimper instead of a bang. You have you put this out, and the almanac is sort of set in stone, and, you know, I'm sure you start publishing it months in advance, but have a service that people subscribe to that updates you along the way, and you get to change your mind or augment that, but it still is based on historical trends, right?
Historical trends. I mean, we have five disciplines that we track. Seasonality, cycles, historical trends is one. Fundamentals is another, technicals, monetary policy, and sentiment. Those are the five basic tenets, the five disciplines that we look at. So while seasonality and history and cycles and trends are our foundation, we are not going to stick with a pattern that's not working, that's being overrun or by other more powerful forces. So we look at a lot of different things.
Sentiment is a tough thing to gauge right now, because I mean, it really depends on who you talk to. The haves have a lot, and the have-nots are really suffering more than ever before.
The sentiments that I look at are some of the more, contrary sentiment indicators like put call ratio, investors' intelligence, AI investors' intelligence, AI individual investors there, readings. And the sentiment, while there is some general consumer sentiment that's negative out there, the market sentiment, what we see in, the sort of bullish sentiment, but there are more bulls than bears, and the put-call ratio is being kind of frothy or at least mellow. I found that sentiment, as a contrary indicator, really doesn't work as well at tops and when it's very bullish. It works great when you have a lot of bears at market bottoms and you kind of get that washout because, bottoms and end of bear markets are kind of events that happen very quickly, whereas tops are a process and they take a longer time to materialize. So sentiment is tricky at tops when it's bullish or frothy.
And sometimes it looks like they compress the activity. I look back to the Trump bump that came along November 5th. It looked like we got about 6 months worth of rally in the space of a couple of weeks.
I mean, it happens. It bounces around. What happens, over 6 months, includes a lot of volatility and amplitude of bouncing around in between. So I think that Trump bump was really more of the event was over. We had a decision quickly. Yes, there's some, things that the market was happy about with President Trump's win. But personally, and I think a lot of people were more excited or more pleased or more relieved that we didn't have a drawn out indecisive election, and I think that was most important.
And that's really what was being projected. A lot of times we hear that the first year of a presidency is the year that they try to do all of the unpopular stuff because they don't have to run for re-election, or the people, their constituents, that you know don't have an election to vote to keep House members in or Senate members in. So you try to pack all the bad stuff in. Is that why I was the some figures I've seen show that the inaugural year return for Republicans going back to, who is it, Hoover, is 2.6%, whereas for the Democrats, it's 17.2%.
Yeah, I mean, we have a page in the Almanac that shows that post-election years, as we call them, the inaugural year, whatever you, if you want to refer to it that way, are better for Democrats than they are for Republicans. Republicans tend to come in sort of ready to roll with their, you know, sort of conservative-minded mentality where they know what they want to do. Democrats take a little more time. That's why the midterm year tends to be weaker, or has tended to be weaker over a longer period of time. But going back to Hoover is a little far. pre-World War II, you know, it's a different, a new world. Industrial complex, military-industrial complex, pharmaceutical-industrial complex, service economy. So since World War II, post-election years have been a lot better. And since 85, they've been the best year of the four-year cycle, averaging about 17.2% versus about 15 and change for the pre-election year, which is the third year, the best year, even though the pre-election years have one more year of gain. So it's gotten better. There's a couple of Republican post-election years that are on our page going since World War II, where you got 57, you know, Cold War issues. And then 69 and 73, you had Vietnam, and you know, that was post-68 where we had the, you know, LBJ dropping out, similar to the, you know, election year we had here with some similar end of December things. So there's a couple of things we're looking at, but generally post-election years have been much better in recent years.
So as you look ahead and craft what you're going to be advising people for the coming year, what are the wild cards? Is it geopolitics? Is it the Fed and interest rates?
I mean, geopolitics and international issues are always a wild card. But I think you hit it there. I mean, it's the Fed, it's interest rates, and inflation. I mean, we're tracking our inflation projection, charts that we put out there. And these month-over-month ticks, whether it's PCE or CPI, that's what we're looking at there. And, you know, the Fed definitely took a shot across the bow, as I said earlier, kind of like maybe classic under-promise, over-deliver. They wanted to tamp down the market's expectations. And, I think those are the two big issues. We're looking at the 10-year coming back a little bit towards 4.5. Our line in the sand for the 10-year is 4.3. So interest rates and inflation are definitely the wild cards. I don't even know if they're that wild. I think they're the they're up on the table. They're, everyone's looking at them, so it's kind of obvious. But that's what economically we have good growth. I'm concerned also about Europe and you know, overseas. There seems to be some economic malaise and woes over there. Troubles. We've got some political issues, especially in Germany and France. So there's a lot of moving parts. You know, there's always the Middle East. There's always China and what's going on in the other hot spots. But I think some of the newer ones would be Europe economically and inflation and rates.
You know, I noticed you have a commodity almanac too. And it's naive to think that there's only one asset class in stocks. You buy them or sell them. But there are lots of other places to put money. Obviously, we've talked about fixed income and what you do with bonds, but commodities too. And commodities play an important part of investing.
They do. I mean, we're working on putting out, we haven't done a full commodity traders almanac in about a decade. We're working on putting a new one out. There's so many different classes in there. It's not quite as, it's a little bit more cumbersome than the stock traders almanac to put together. And the trading vehicles the futures are not as conducive to retail individual investors. We do a lot of correlation with ETFs. There's a lot of ETFs that track commodities. We do that. Use it for our sector rotation strategies. The seasonal work there. There's plenty of. I mean, right now we have a copper trade in there. I mean, I picked up the copper miners on the dip here. You know, that's one of the December commodity seasonal trades. I opted for the miners because they seem to have a little bit more you know, upside than the actual underlying commodity ETF, along with the energy, ETFs. I mean, oil and gas starts to make a low around December to February, but we get into the energy producers, you know, your XLE type stocks and the XES, the pipelines and the companies that are, you know, moving it along.
Right.
So those are a couple of seasonal commodity trades that we're into right now.
Is there enough data about Bitcoin to even consider that, including that?
Just enough for me. I did some seasonal work last year and we continue to track it. So another one of my, if you want to call that a commodity or a currency, that's another one of our holdings. We got into it just ahead of the fourth quarter. You mentioned November, the Trump bump, where there was like 6 months of gains for stocks in that period, roughly. But Bitcoin is an average of 40% gain in November, and It hit that on the nose. So it's starting to show that some of this, the data is, you know, kind of enough. I'm concerned about the future of Bitcoin. It's coming to, you know, a very mature level. And I'm just not sure it can continue to push up into the hundreds of thousands. I think, you know, 150 is doable, but after that, there's going to be some issues with, how it's used around the world. It's going to have to grow up a little bit.
A lot more history in stocks. And like I say, whenever we want history in stocks, we go to the Stock Traders Almanac and the work from Jeffrey Hirsch, the editor who joined us today. It's good to have you with us. We wish you a great 2025.
Best to you.
Thanks. For more of our conversation, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.